And welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We've got a loaded show for you today. We'll continue to discuss the Titans and the Ravens. Got some college football to get to now. But also at 8 o'clock, Chris Johnson, former Titans running back, will join us. CJ2K will be in the house, so looking forward to that discussion. At 9 o'clock, Adam Kaplan from SiriusXM, NFL Insider. We'll get into some Arthur Smith stuff with him as well. Lots of good discussion on that yesterday. And then at 9:30, Bernard Pollard, former Titans and Ravens safety, will join us. Always entertaining to talk to. So a loaded show today here on Robbie and Rex Road. Hope you'll stay with us all the way up until 10 a.m. So, Joe, it's finally official. The Heisman Trophy ceremony was performed last night, albeit in much different circumstances than we're used to. Not everybody's gathered together in New York, and there's not this big presentation and speech on a Saturday night like there normally is. But like most things in 2020/2021, you find a way to adapt. And DeVonta Smith, Alabama wide receiver, wins the Heisman Trophy. He becomes the third player in Alabama's history to win the Heisman, with Mark Ingram and Derrick Henry being the other two. And you look at the voting, Joe. I mean, DeVonta Smith won by a pretty wide margin. Trevor Lawrence finishes in second, Mac Jones in third, Kyle Trask in fourth. Joe Rexroad, you're a Heisman voter. Did the voters get it right? Was DeVonta Smith the best choice to win the Heisman Trophy?
They did. They just didn't exactly match my ballot, so I'm disappointed in that. But I just flip flopped Jones, and I had Jones and Lawrence. And honestly, I think you could make a case. You can make a case for all of them. I feel better just with the way things ended about leaving Trask off. I mean, his numbers were crazy. But yeah, I think they did. I think DeVonta Smith was the best player in college football. And look, there is a little bit of, I think sometimes with these awards, it's like, gosh, could we ever get someone other than a quarterback in there at some point? You know, I mean, I think sometimes maybe there's a little bit of that, like voter fatigue and the same old thing year after year. And obviously, I mean, you know, you've had running backs. I mean, Derrick Henry won it a few years ago, but I think it was the right call. I mean, he was just dominant, and then you put him on punt return and he dominates there. And you know, you take away Jaylen Waddle, who actually, you know, Jaylen Waddle was probably having more highlight plays early in the year when he went down.
Yeah.
Now they were co-number ones, but you take him away, which, yeah, you could say maybe gives DeVonta Smith more opportunities, but it certainly makes it harder on DeVonta Smith. I mean, you're going to focus on him as a defense. Doesn't matter. And Mac Jones gets credit too. The whole offense was unbelievable. Najee Harris should get some mention here, but I think they did get it right. By the way, so real quick, so Tommy Dees, my guy, used to be my sports editor at the Tennessee, and he's Alabama guy, SEC and Alabama sports editor for Gannett. Here's a great tweet from him last night. An Alabama guy won the Heisman Trophy, and college football fans far and wide seem happy with that, and you thought 2020 was strange. That is funny.
That's pretty good.
Because, I mean, when Henry won it, there was a whole bunch of McCaffrey complaining out there. Well, gosh, the year Ingram won it.
What was that, 2009?
Someone yeah. else.
Colt McCoy, maybe?
No, Toby Gerhart.
Toby Gerhart, yeah. Oh, man, what a time. How'd that work out for Toby Gerhart in the NFL? Not great.
He was around for a minute, right?
Yeah, not too long of a career there. It is amazing, though, like to look at DeVonta Smith. He's the first wide receiver to win the award since 91 when Desmond Howard wins the award. He finishes the year 105 receptions, 1,641 yards, and 20 receiving touchdowns. And maybe the craziest thing, Joe, like, we all know how many times he was targeted this year by Alabama and Mac Jones. He dropped two passes all season long. And just with the difficulty of catches that guy goes up and makes, and the different routes that he's able to run, to have that many targets and to drop two passes all season, pretty incredible.
Yeah, and look, so here's the thing with DeVonta Smith. You know, he did all he could to try to put weight on, because that's the knock on him. And I think Jaylen Waddle is going to go before him in the draft because of that. And you know what? Maybe he is too skinny, and that's going to be a detriment in some way to him. But as a college football player, I mean, this isn't like who's the best pro prospect. I mean, it's amazing how good he is at everything.
Yeah.
At route running, at running after the catch, adjusting downfield to deep passes. You know, like you said, those drops. He doesn't drop the ball. He high points the ball. Strong hands. Just an all around, just amazing player, and worthy of, you know, almost 30 years later being the next guy since Desmond Howard. I mean, to me, a better player in this year than Desmond Howard was that year.
Do you see a little bit of Marvin Harrison and Devontae Smith?
You know, someone brought that up, and I hadn't thought of it, but I think that's a great comparison. Was it Mache?
It was Todd Mache on the broadcast, right? Yeah.
I didn't even hear that. I like that. Yeah, well, that's impressive on your part. Yeah, but I had not thought of that, but I think that's a good call. You know, Marvin Harrison was also kind of a lankier guy, an unbelievable player. I mean, it's just hard for me to imagine Devontae Smith not being a great player at the next level.
Yeah, and it's been incredible to watch, and it seems like he's been there forever because he was the guy that caught the game-winning touchdown pass from Tua in the national championship game, and a lot of people wondered why he didn't come out and go into the draft last year, but I think we're seeing why. I mean, he came back, he's continued to work on his game, won the Heisman Trophy, is going to be one of the top receivers selected in the draft this year, so congratulations to Devontae Smith. I do wonder, Joe, how much damage, you know, missing a couple of games did for Trevor Lawrence in this discussion, because we talked about it heading into the season. He and Justin Fields coming in were the runaway favorites to win the Heisman Trophy. Trevor Lawrence finishes in second. How much do you think missing a couple of games affected that vote in the end?
Yeah, I think it did. And look, you can still make a case that, you know, Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields are the top two players. You know, I mean, you can make the case. I mean, especially, again, they might go 1-2 in the draft. But this is also about achievement, and it is about being out there. And it's too bad when you have a tough break like that. It's not his fault, but I have no doubt that that was a factor. And for Justin Fields, I mean, he was already, you know, Ohio State doesn't get penalized ultimately in the end, as I think they should not have been, but he got penalized for their lack of games and their lack of. He just didn't have any real – he was great at Penn State, and that's when I was like, uh-oh. In fact, at that point, Justin Fields was like in the informal Heisman polls, he was ahead. But then Penn State turns out to stink, and he just doesn't really have any other great moments. He throws a couple bad picks against Indiana, and he's out of there. But both those guys, quality-wise, are up there. It's a weird year.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Corey in Bellevue texts in and says, finally, someone in NCAA football gets something right. Smith is clearly the best player in the game this year, and then in all capital letters, it does not have to be a quarterback. I think that's maybe why people are so happy, like to Tommy Dees' point, like, yes, it's an Alabama player, but it's also not a quarterback, so I think you can live with it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think, honestly, if Mac Jones would have won it, then there would have been a lot more, oh, okay, so he's throwing a Waddle and Smith and Harris and great, you know. And again, I think Mac Jones is great. And I, by the way, I hope our guy Drew Chester is okay with this.
He's not.
Different Alabama player. He's not?
He's not. Let's go to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You know, you have Devontae Smith winning the Heisman. You've got three Bama players finishing in the top five. And what does Drew text about today? Quote, Trevor Lawrence getting second is a joke. So you've got all these different things to be happy about, and Trevor Lawrence finishing ahead of Mac Jones. It just set off Drew today.
It's so important that Mac gets second. How about celebrate Devontae Smith's winning the Heisman Trophy?
Three guys in the top five. Drew. Now, I will say, I almost would have single-handedly given Najee Harris the Heisman just for that hurdle. I know that the vote was already done at that point, but if I could retroactively go back and give him the Heisman based on nothing more than the hurdle he had against Notre Dame, I might have done that. That's how impressive it was.
He was. I mean, I remember after the Ole Miss game, I think, I was like, it's got to be Najee Harris. And actually, yeah, the hurdle, just incredible. But also his performance against Florida was, jeez. I mean, how many teams have – I'm sure someone has had this, but how many teams have had three of the top five ever?
It's got to be a short list, and that just goes to show how good this Alabama offense has been all season long. And, Joe, looking ahead to the national title game, Alabama's offense could get even better coming into this game. We'll discuss it when we come back. Could the Tide get a key player back that they've been missing for the majority of this season? We'll discuss that on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, we talked about it in the last segment. Devontae Smith, Alabama's wide receiver, winning the Heisman Trophy, becoming the third Alabama player to win the Heisman Trophy in their history, joining Mark Ingram and Derrick Henry. And three of the top five vote-getters in the Heisman Trophy voting were on Alabama's offense. Devontae Smith, Mac Jones at quarterback finishing third, and then Najee Harris at running back finishing fifth. So obviously a loaded offense for Alabama heading into this national title matchup against Ohio State, which right now still scheduled for next Monday. We'll get to that a little bit more here in a second with some COVID issues that Ohio State may be having. But Joe, it looks like Alabama could get another boost offensively as if they need it heading into this game against Ohio State. Jaylen Waddle, who was hurt on the opening kickoff against Tennessee in a brutal-looking injury, has apparently been moving around, apparently been practicing, and has now been cleared to return. So there's no word yet on if he's actually going to play in this game against Ohio State, and I think the feeling is that's basically going to be up to Jaylen Waddle at this point. But I am really pretty amazed that we're even having this discussion, given what that injury was and what it looked like in that Tennessee game, that maybe Jaylen Waddle will be available for Alabama in this game against Ohio State. And man, if you're Ohio State, that could be really bad news on that front on an offense that's already almost impossible to slow down.
Yeah, I don't even know, like, is there a point where it's like it's just picking who's going to get the touchdown? Alabama, like, are you more scared? Like, you should already be terrified. But another unbelievable weapon. Look, I hope it happens. I hope he at least, like, dresses, maybe gets a play or two. That'd be awesome for him after that awful injury in Knoxville. A kid who was having such an incredible year, for him to be able to be a part of this as they go for a national championship would be great. So I'm rooting for that, you know, for him. I don't know how much it changes things. You would assume that there'd be some rustiness and some hesitation to, you know, go all out. And this is a guy who might be a top five pick. I think great chance of being a top 10 pick, will be a first rounder. So you don't want to mess around, because if you have a second injury on top of this, then, you know, that threatens to hurt someone's stock. But yeah, it'd be very cool to see. I'm sure the Buckeyes don't want to see it. Of course, they're more worried about, like, who they won't have.
Yeah. And you talk about Waddle, like the deep threat he would give to Alabama. Before he got hurt, he had caught 25 passes in 5 games, 4 touchdowns. And the crazy part is he averaged 22.3 yards per catch. So, and he already owns 3 of the 5 longest scoring touchdowns in Alabama history. So we talk about how versatile Devontae Smith is and the different routes he can run and the speed that he has. Jaylen Waddle, I mean, he's got versatility to him as well. But just the big play threat that he is, I mean, that could cause the defense a whole lot of issues. When you've got him to worry about, Devontae Smith to worry about, Najee Harris in the backfield, Miller Forrestall at tight end, who I think is a pretty good tight end as well. I mean, it's almost unfair at this point for Alabama.
Yeah. I mean, look, to me, it's can Ohio State do what they did up front? I mean, you got to affect the quarterback. You got to affect Mac Jones. And that's what hasn't happened this year really much at all. They've run the ball. And he has had clean pockets. And again, he's been great, but affecting him has been very difficult this year. That is an incredible offensive line. I mean, Alabama's loaded everywhere, but I don't think we talk enough about the offensive line. And so, you know, if Ohio State can do what they did to Clemson's O-line to some extent and take him off his spots a little bit, well, you know, then that's how you get some stops. Waddle or no Waddle, if not, they're going to make plays downfield and score. I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, they've figured it out with some of these other guys who are also very good. And I don't know if these, like Mechie and some of these guys, are going to end up being as good as Waddle and Smith. That's asking a lot. but they just keep rolling these guys through who are just terrific talents.
They do, and, you know, certainly no shortage of talent for Alabama on that side of the ball. And then switching gears to Ohio State, some news coming out that they've been dealing with COVID-19 issues that maybe, hopefully not, but maybe could affect the timing of this national championship game. Now, as of now, the national championship game remains scheduled for next Monday, January 11th, and you can hear that right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. But there is some conversation out there, Joe, that maybe Ohio State not going to be in a position where they can play this game. Now, Ohio State Athletic Director Gene Smith did say yesterday that, quote, we continue to follow the same protocols as we have all season, and our intent is to play on January the 11th. But I don't think out of the realm of possibility, Joe, that this game may have to be moved if Ohio State doesn't have their COVID issues fixed. And the crazy part is, I mean, you still, when you're talking about these two teams, you've got one set of standards for Alabama and the SEC, and still a different set of circumstances for Ohio State in the Big Ten of what it's required to play in this game. So kind of a crazy situation going on with Ohio State that's up in the air. And, of course, that has people around college football and Alabama fans specifically saying, okay, well, Ohio State, they've got these quote-unquote COVID issues because they're trying to dodge the game. They're trying to get Justin Fields more time to return from a rib injury that he had in the game against Clemson. And we'll talk about that a little bit more here later in the show. I think Nick Saban's daughter yesterday went all over Twitter and was talking about just playing the game and not trying to dodge it. You know, we heard Kirk Herbstreit back a few weeks ago talk about this with Michigan and how you're dodging games. Look, I don't know if I get into all that and trying to dodge games. I think it just kind of is what it is with COVID. We've learned that. But not a surprise that the Alabama fans are kind of taking that next step and saying Ohio State could be trying to get Justin Fields more time in this game.
Yeah, Saban's daughter coming strong. She deleted the tweet, but she was coming strong. But Pete Thamel, you know, very good reporter for Yahoo and very, very well sourced at Ohio State in particular, says a source with direct knowledge of the decision said there's a confidence behind the scenes at Ohio State that it'll be ready to play Monday. The source acknowledged Ohio State has endured some COVID issues and will be missing players for the title game, but stressed that wasn't an extraordinary amount that would necessitate the game being postponed, end quote. So, I feel like it's, yesterday there were a few reports that made it seem different than this, and then Thamel came with this. It kind of dunked on it. So I would say unless there's something new that emerges, we're looking at a title game Monday.
So right now, Alabama, an 8.5-point favorite in this game, according to the FanDuel Sportsbook. We saw it. Clemson, I think, was 6.5-point favorites against Ohio State heading into that game. And we know what happened in that game. So what kind of a chance, Joe, do you give Ohio State in this game against Alabama coming up next Monday?
Based on what we saw, I give Ohio State a definite chance in this game. This is a tremendous collection of talent on their side as well, on both sides of the ball. And if Justin Fields is going to throw the ball like that, then, you know, I like their chances to make this a game. I do have a question about him. I mean, obviously running the football is a big part of his game, and that did not look good. The injury he took, all credit due to his toughness for hanging in there. But then how does he feel Monday? And does he have to sort of rein things in a little bit, and do they have to change some things that they would normally do because of that? That's one of my big questions. Like, I don't think anybody's stopping Alabama, but I think Ohio State has enough guys to get some stops to hang in there. I mean, what they did against Clemson was frankly stunning at times. So I think they have a chance, and we don't know who they'll be missing. Apparently they will be missing some people because of COVID, but it doesn't sound like it's, like the whole offensive line or something crazy like that. So I think they got a shot.
And it's interesting, like you look at the over-under in this game, and typically in college football, like it's, in the high 50s, maybe early 60s in terms of where the bar is set with the over-under. For this national title game, the over-under right now on FanDuel Sportsbook, 74.5. And it feels like with Alabama's offense, you've just got to assume they're getting into the 40s, maybe early 50s at some point, and you've just got to score with them. Now, I will say, if Justin Fields plays the way he played the other night, Ohio State's going to be able to score on that Alabama defense. I do think that kind of this demise of Bama's defense has been exaggerated throughout the year, but I think they have shown that they are vulnerable. And Ohio State, especially if Justin Fields can throw the ball the way he did the other night, they'll be able to put up points on this Alabama defense.
Well, I'll tell you what. One thing Notre Dame did better than I thought they would do is they actually ran the ball decently in that game. Trey Sermon and that offensive line against Clemson, my goodness, did he just bully them. And so, I think you're going to see a lot of that. You know, Trey Sermon wasn't really even playing that well early in the year. He looks unbelievable. In the last two games, like two of the all-time great running back performances for Ohio State against Northwestern and, in the playoff game. So I think they've got the balance. It is important that they have some of that threat with Fields too, though, I think, to be able to do enough offensively.
If they are able to do that on the ground, like they have in the Big Ten title game and then against Clemson, Alabama won't be putting up 40 or 50 points.
Yeah.
Because they won't have the ball as much as they're used to, because Ohio State will be able to sustain some drives offensively. So I would think that this comes down to like a 38-34 type game.
Okay, so you're going under.
My first blush. 74 is 74
and a half.
Lot.
That's a big number.
That is a massive number. And I do think Ohio State will be able to sustain many drives in this game. So I would probably lean under.
You know, Alabama does have a knack for like 19 second touchdown drives, but yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, if that's got to be the game plan, obviously. I mean, it's everybody's game plan against Alabama, but few can do it. But Ohio State has the guys, I think, to do it.
So speaking of Ohio State, there was a play in the game in the playoff against Clemson that was very controversial. It got Joe Rexroad and myself into a frenzy on Twitter. We'll bring it back up and discuss it when we come back. This is Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. 102.5 The Game Nashville has your chance to win a Nashville Predators reverse retro jersey and a copy of the EA Sports NHL 21 video game. Be listening at 8:45 every morning this week for the keyword of the day, and then text that keyword into the game text line at 615-737-1025, and you'll be entered for a chance to win. The winner will be announced on Thursday, January the 14th, which is next Thursday. So make sure you're listening for that. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning. Former Titans running back Chris Johnson joining us at 8 o'clock. So looking forward to that conversation coming up with him here in just about 30 minutes. But Joe, we talked about Ohio State in the last segment and Justin Fields, maybe a rib injury he's dealing with right now. And that all came from a play in the college football semifinal game for Ohio State against Clemson. And Justin Fields is scrambling. He's been a very good runner of the football in his career. He gets outside of the pocket. He's running down the field. He escapes a tackle from Clemson. And while he's doing so, spins around, exposes his back, and James Skalski, linebacker for Clemson, lowers the crown of his helmet, hits him directly in the back of the ribs. Fields goes down. He's hurt on the play. And eventually, Skalski is ejected from the game for targeting. And they go back, they review it, they confirm that it was targeting, and Skalski was kicked out of the game from that point on. Now, let me first start off by saying, I don't really think that had a huge impact on the game. I'm not saying that Clemson's going to win that game if that call's not made. I thought Ohio State was totally dominant in that game. But the first reaction I had to it on Friday night while it was taking place is, how do you kick a guy out of the game for something like that when you're moving so fast? You make contact with the ribs, and I get it. The hit, he lowered his helmet. There's no way to deny that. You go back and look at the replay, and I guess by definition of the rule, it is targeting. But to me, the fact that he got kicked out of the game for something like that, and that at this point we have not developed some sort of flagrant one or flagrant two in college football where you can judge intent to some degree, it's just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I thought it was totally insane that he got kicked out of the game for that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not against – yeah, I mean, first of all, I mean, that was textbook targeting, you know. It was. I mean, by the – and really that specific instance, it's more you know, Skalski's health that's the concern, right? I mean, lowering your head. And frankly, this goes way before – the CTE and concussion error and things like that. I mean, keeping your head up is, mean, that's that, because obviously you can break your neck if you don't.
Sure.
And I understand there's no way it's easy, and it's so fast. These guys are so fast and athletic. You sit there and watch these slow-mo replays and say, how could you do that? Well, you go out there and try to figure it out. I get that. And I'm not totally opposed to what you're saying, but I also think, like, I mean, intent is, you know, this isn't about intent. It's about making the game safer, and it's about changing habits. So I have a hard time imagining them softening this thing, because really this is about preserving football long term. And this is one of the things that I think the game, I'm just as entertained by the game. Look, I used to love those monster hits when people would take someone's head off. And now I have a hard time watching some old games now on some of the stuff that was just let go. So like the idea of, well, if this is going to happen, then let's just not play football. Well, the whole point is let's play football and let's make it safer. I'm not opposed to your idea of tiering it, because I think there are some targeting calls that everyone would be like, oh my God, you know, like where it's you, like you turn and you happen to clink helmets with someone. I mean, I've seen that called for targeting, and I've seen that. They all cause an ejection, right? I mean, targeting causes an ejection. So like I'm not opposed to tiering, but I mean, intent is, how many times anymore in football is there like, oh, that guy clearly was just going and trying to take that guy's head off with his helmet, you know?
Well, I mean, I think there are some instances where it's pretty obvious the dude's coming in for a kill shot. I mean, I think that happens still a lot in college football. And look, I'm with you on player safety. Obviously, none of us want to see people out there getting hurt. You certainly don't want to see people breaking their neck. And it was not a good form tackle by Skalski on that play. I also, like, I don't know what you want him to do. Justin Fields is spinning around, and he's not in the same place that he was supposed to be where Skalski's going in to make that tackle. Like, I get it. You got to keep your head up, and I understand that. But is that really worth getting kicked out of the game for that? Like, I just think that's ridiculous. It's way too punitive. I mean, that's – just think about if that game's still close and how big of a player he is for that defense. I mean, he's been there for 5 years at this point. Obviously, a very experienced player, James Skalski for Clemson. I think we've gotten to a point where it's way too punitive. Orlovsky talked about it after the hit. Aaron Rodgers has talked about this before at the college level. And James Skalski himself was asked about it after the game against Ohio State and the loss for Clemson on Friday night. Here's what James Skalski had to say.
At the end of the day, they're trying to protect everybody. So I don't think there's ever been a targeting called like that one. I definitely think there needs to be some reevaluation of how that is applied to the game. But again, I know, you know, they're trying to protect, you know, the ball carrier and me. I mean, I honestly haven't even got the, you know, take a good look at it. Like, but to me, I just, open field, had a good hit, was on the ground. I thought we were, you know, whatever down it was, let's go, next play. And then they say they're reviewing for targeting and don't agree with it.
And I will say, you know, we can argue about the hit itself, and obviously, like I said, I'm not going to sit here and deny that it wasn't a good tackle, wasn't a form tackle, and he lowered the crown of his helmet. I also can't recall ever seeing a play in college football quite like that in terms of a targeting review. Like, usually the targeting review is helmet-to-helmet contact or lowering the helmet into the shoulder of a receiver going across the field. Like, I don't know that I've ever seen one called for a hit to the ribs.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think I've seen I can't recall a lot, but I've seen others like that that are low, but they were clearly using the helmet as a weapon. You know, the next morning, Skalski, I assume at this point, watched the play and tweeted, everyone can have their opinion on it, but the bottom line is I got to keep my head up. You know, look, I hear you on punitive, but that's how you deter behavior. That's how you change things. And I do see just fewer, and this is not a targeting thing, but I see fewer instances of people just trying to hurt someone with head hunting, and that's more like defensive backs over the middle, things like that. Even some of the quarterback protection stuff is, I think, is at times like, really? I mean, Kirk Cousins got sacked the other day, like just got sacked.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I understand the putting your weight on a quarterback, but that wasn't like the guy trying to land himself on him, and they got to – they gave the lines a 15, you know, or a personal foul. I mean, there's a lot of that that at times is like, oh gosh, it's too much. But you know what? That's if you have that consequence, that's how you change behavior. If it's just 15 yarders handed out left and right, I don't think it has the desired effect. And I think the desired effect is happening. And look, you think long-term with football. I mean, I remember arguing, you know, just probably 3-4 years ago with friends of mine, like football's in trouble. Like football is going to die. And I said, look, I don't buy that at all because it's so popular. It's by far most popular sport. People love to watch it. It's still incredibly entertaining and you can still have a great product and be way safer. But the labor force for football is shrinking and will continue to shrink. I mean, there's no question about that. There are more and more parents who are afraid of getting their kids in this game. More, you know, and some of it is like soccer growing and things like that too. But you do have to think of the long-term health of the game and the preservation of the game. And to me, this is one of those things you have to do.
I completely agree with Robbie on this, where whether it's a flagrant one, flagrant two, or a yellow card, red card system in soccer, I do think there has to be a little bit of judgment on intent with the hit. And I know that can become a gray area in a lot of cases, but I would agree with Robbie that I don't think that hit that Skalski put on Justin Fields was worthy of him getting kicked out of the game. I just don't. You know, if it was a headhunting hit where he went helmet to helmet on Fields, then I think that is when it becomes a red card or flagrant two or whatever. But when it's a hit to the ribs or even a hit to the shoulder, if there's not clear intent there, I don't think you deserve to be kicked out of the game.
So again, I'm going to say,
why can't it just be a 15-yard penalty and just leave it at that?
Well, because it's absolutely classic targeting. Now, again, I mean, we're talking about changing the rule. So I'm not opposed to it, but then to me, the only things that don't result in ejections are those really incidental, like helmet-to-helmet contact plays where it's like, okay, there's nothing that person could have done. This, in this tiered system, I'm absolutely still ejecting him for targeting in my tiered system. Because again, the person you're worried about is him, okay? Because if you use your helmet that way, whether he meant to, whether there was nothing he could have done, I have sympathy for that. But you keep your freaking head up at all times. I mean, I don't, you know, and I do think that something like this, I promise you, this play will be replayed at clinics, and this will be an example of, look, it may not be fair, but here's an example of he went in and delivered a hit with his head down, and you can't do it. You can't. So in my tiered system, this still qualifies. I'm not opposed to a tiered system with some of these. I mean, there are definitely, we've all seen some targeting calls where it's like, no way, you know, and it just happened to be contact. And that's where there's still judgment and subjectivity in this. And some of those are on these refs. I don't think they're applying the rule correctly. In this case, this is classic applying the rule correctly.
I disagree. I don't think that it is. I mean, this is way too punitive for that. Just imagine what an impact on the game that could have. Like you said, he gets up. He's not even thinking about it on that play. I get it. It's not a good hit. It's not worth getting kicked out of the game. It's ridiculous. It's okay, football. Hold on. There is an inherent risk to it.
Right. I understand that. But you disagree. I mean, it is targeting. I mean, like you can disagree with the rule and want to change it. But I promise you, this is 100% classic targeting. I mean,
some common sense here. It's not a dirty hit. He's not getting kicked out of the game for this. What other sport is there out there where you have a hit that's not dirty, not intent to bring anybody else out, and you don't get kicked out of the game? You're not getting kicked out of the game in the NFL for that hit.
Yeah, I mean, it's a dangerous hit to him more than anything. So, again, I mean, I understand, like, dirty should be its own thing. But the way the rule is, targeting, I mean, this is that. And, again, it's more dangerous to him. So, I mean, if there's just no way you're going to soften things up with this. And you talk about other sports. I mean, this sport is different in that way. I mean, frankly, you could probably look at hockey more for some things. because hockey, there's a lot of hits to the head and things like that too.
Sure.
But football has been, look, football, you know, you think about some of these awful junior sales stories and things like that, and some of the data that's still being compiled on CTE, and it's scary. And I'm not saying this is all of a sudden going to change that. There's an inherent risk in playing this sport that people have to basically agree to take on. But I mean, this is targeting, and I would the head being in that way on any tackle. I don't think Skalski was trying to be dirty at all, and I'm sure it was tough to avoid. But you have to keep your head up.
I would just hope that at some point in college football, we can get to a point where common sense takes over. You can implement a flagrant one, flagrant two. You can have a little bit of judgment involved with these calls to avoid this situation that's too punitive. I agree with you, Joe. I'm not sure that's going to happen, because I think once you've established this, it's going to be tough to go back in college football. But I would hope in the next few years we get to that point.
Well, and we have seen some calls, and this is a change, I think, a couple years ago, you know, where they retain the 15-yarder, right, for, you know, like they retain a 15-yarder for, like, unnecessary roughness.
Right.
But then they look at the replay and it doesn't come into targeting. So, I mean, at least there's that. I think in the first year or two of targeting, that was not an option. And I think that's a good change. But, yeah, I mean, anything with head down launching into someone, again, it's dangerous for Skalski. And we've seen players not only be paralyzed, but die because of this on college football before. So, I mean, again, that's even beyond the concussion issue. So it's not easy. And I agree. Common sense, watch the replay. I think we've seen some guys do it well. There is subjectivity to it. There is gray area and room for interpretation. But if you take this to an officiating clinic, it's 100 out of 100. This is targeting, classic ejection.
Coming up next, a tough day yesterday for the Cleveland Browns. They're having some COVID problems right now. How is that going to affect their game against Pittsburgh? Also get into the latest coming out of Nashville Predators training camp as well. All that coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning. Former Titans running back Chris Johnson going to join us to begin the 8 o'clock hour. Looking forward to talking about the game against the Ravens and looking back at Derrick Henry's journey to 2,000 yards this season with him. So that conversation coming up here in just a few minutes here on Robbie and Rex Road. But Joe, a tough day yesterday for the Cleveland Browns. It was announced shortly after we got off the air that head coach Kevin Stefanski, two additional members of the coaching staff, and two players have tested positive for COVID-19. And are not going to be available for the game on Sunday or this weekend coming up against the Pittsburgh Steelers. The first time the Browns have made the playoffs since 2002. Pro Bowl guard Joel Bitonio, another player that has tested positive, and then wide receiver Kadarrell Hodge also tested positive as well. So we know that, you know, Stefanski, Joe, has been at least in the conversation all year long for Coach of the Year. He's gotten Cleveland back to the playoffs. It's been an incredibly successful first season under Stefanski. How big of a deal is this for the Browns heading into this game?
Well, it's a bigger deal than some head coaches missing a game, you know, because he is the play caller and a lot of their success. Scheme versatility, by the way.
Yeah.
Kevin Stefanski, just like Arthur Smith, but not like Brian Daboll. He stinks. That's a joke. That's a joke from all my Buffalo Bills Mafia.
I hope Bills Mafia is listening right now.
I hope they are too.
Me too. I love them. That's a big deal, though. And obviously, you're going to miss your head coach in any situation, a playoff game. It's, you know, it's a pretty important position. But when you are also the play caller and what you do offensively is such a big part of your success, how could that not hurt you? I think it's a big deal. And we're also going to find out here maybe, and hopefully there's nothing else to come from the Browns, but this is, as it's been reported by several, you know, NFL reporters yesterday, like the NFL, it would take extreme issues for the NFL to even think about moving this game.
Yeah.
So at this point, game on. And even if there are some more positives here in the next few days, probably game on. And they're not going to try to do the, you know, play Wednesday or Thursday thing or whatever.
And it looks like offensive coordinator Alex Van Pelt is expected to be the one calling plays for the Browns on Sunday against Pittsburgh. And we've seen it. You know, Roethlisberger has had incredible success against Cleveland in his career. I don't think he's ever lost against the Browns at home, and that will be the case again coming up this weekend, Pittsburgh hosting this game. But it's a game, quite honestly, Joe, that heading into this week, I kind of circled as a game where I thought Cleveland, as the sixth seed, they have a decent chance in this game to knock off the Steelers. I get it. The Steelers defensively, they still got some pieces that you really like. T.J. Watt played at a level that I think is worthy of winning Defensive Player of the Year. So a lot still to like there from Pittsburgh. But just based on the offense and how inconsistent they've been over the course of the last 4 or 5 weeks of the season, I thought Cleveland had a pretty good chance heading into this game. I'm not going to say they don't have a chance now, but not having Stefanski in there, to your point, Joe, I think is a much bigger deal than it would otherwise be for some of these other teams. Just given the fact that he is the play caller, he's been the one that's been able to turn this team around. Now, you still have Chubb. You still have Baker Mayfield. You've got Jarvis Landry to throw the ball to. And I think the Browns have done a good job later on in the season of getting back to their identity of being a hard-nosed team, running the football, going on play action after that. We saw that firsthand here in Nashville against the Titans. But I do think this significantly hurts their chances against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, Cleveland, as I looked at all the potential upsets, I mean, I immediately looked at that game. I probably would have looked at any team opposing the Steelers, even with that crazy second half that helped the Titans win the AFC South, you know, when the Colts just completely collapsed. I mean, most of the evidence of the Steelers the last few weeks has not been good. But, yeah, look, I'm scared off that a little bit now without Stefanski. That's a big deal. You know, they still – I'm sure he's on the Zoom calls this week, and you can come up with the game plan, and, you know, there's a certain amount of, you know, you do what you do. And maybe there's a little bit of a rally around this situation. We've certainly seen teams in binds this year respond to it, but – yeah, it's just you can't feel as good about it without him on the sideline.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Tyler from Berry Hill texts in and says, can we take a minute to hate on the New York Jets for not only taking our chance to play the COVID-depleted Browns team instead of the Ravens, but also forcing us to deal with Trevor Lawrence in the division for the next decade? Seriously, what did Titans fans do to them? And it's a good point. Jets come in there, they beat the Browns. They get Trevor Lawrence in the division here. He's going to end up in Jacksonville. Jets not doing Titans fans any favors as of late.
Screw the Jets.
Yeah, well, like 5 years from now, people really might be, you know, saying that about the Jets. But, yeah, I think the Titans would be better off still. I still think this matchup is better for them. Maybe I'm just, you know, a little bit thinking back to 38-7 Browns, Titans at halftime. But, yeah, now you have the COVID issues. But, man, no doubt, the Jets, you blew it, and it's going to be a whole bunch of Trevor Lawrence in this division for a long time, I would suspect.
So Nashville Predators training camp is underway. They got rolling on the ice on Monday, and still some absences, notably, on the ice. Matthias Ekholm's not been in camp yet. Matt Duchene has not been in camp yet. Mikael Granlund still fighting through some immigration issues to get to the ice and get to camp. Eric Halla just had a baby boy a couple days ago, so hopefully he's on the ice by either Thursday or Friday of this week. But Luke Cunnan, also not in camp as of this point. Obviously, the Predators traded for him. They sent Nick Bonino to Minnesota. Luke Cunnan coming back in that deal. He's a restricted free agent, and they have not gotten him signed to a contract yet. Joe Rexroad, how concerned would you be at this point if you're a Predators fan that Cunnan is not here yet, he is not signed? And how big of a deal is this for the Predators as they're heading through a very shortened version of training camp right now?
Well, now I lean on you for these things, Robbie. You told me that they're going to get it done, so I am not concerned.
I still think they're going to get it done.
You're not concerned?
I'm not at the point yet where I am concerned. I think they're going to get it done here in the next week or so. They'll get it out there. David Poile was on Darren Donick and Chase yesterday. They're working on the deal, so I don't think that this is some like gigantic moment of panic for the Predators. But can you just imagine if they don't find a way to get this done, and the timeline comes around where Cunningham can be an unrestricted free agent? I mean, that would be a pretty massive misstep for the Predators in trading away Nick Bonino.
That'd be a toughie, and you know, to me, it gives him some leverage. But yeah, I mean, you have to. I mean, how important is it? You're talking about a guy who, again, might be a top six guy here. How important is it that he has any training camp? I mean, this condensed season gets going, and it's going. You know, a week from now, for the Preds, a week and a day. But how important is that? How much of a problem is it if he has zero camp?
I think it's a problem. I mean, look, this is a season where you can't really afford to get off to a slow start. Like, we've seen teams in the past in an 82-game season, they come out of the gate, and for the first month and a half of the season, they're sluggish. They don't have their game together. And you've got time to overcome that in a normal season. 56 games, you don't have time to overcome that. So it's important to be ready to go right off the jump. So that's what I'd be concerned about if I'm the Predators. You need to be clicking, I wouldn't say on all cylinders right out of camp, because I think that's very difficult to ask for. But you need to have a pretty good foundation of what you're trying to accomplish out there, your systems, and that's a big part of this too. Cunningham coming into a new system, this is not something that he's been a part of. So I think with a guy like Granlund, even though he's missed time, like, you feel better about him because he knows what he's walking into. He knows what the system is. He's got familiarity with his team and with these players. New guys coming in, it's, I think, even more important that they're on the ice for training camp, especially this year.
Does this crack the door open a little bit more for a Tolvanen?
If I'm Tolvanen, that's certainly the way that I'm viewing it. I mean, I think you've got to at this point, and that's probably the way I'm viewing it anyway, if I'm him. Like, you need to force yourself into the conversation. I think we've reached that point with Elli Tolvanen, but certainly if Cunnan's not a part of the fold, I think it's still a pretty big mystery what they're going to do on that other wing beside Duchesne and Granlund. By the way, Joe Fillion together at practice yesterday, so I don't think a huge surprise there.
As it should be.
Yeah, so I think that's probably going to be the case as the Predators begin the season coming up next Thursday. Hard to believe, January 14th, ooh, right around the corner. When we come back, former Titans running back Chris Johnson, CJ2K, will join us. We're looking forward to that conversation. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.